All right.
This is KX93.5, and you're listening to The Importance of Being Show. I'm your host, Ernest Hackman. We do this show live every Saturday morning from 8 to 9. I mean, 9 to 10. And before we get started, just a quick announcement. KX93.5 is having Radio Camp. I guess this is the second year. You'll get a real radio broadcast experience with the KX crew. You can learn to write, record, produce, edit like a professional DJ. Camp is July 9th through 13th and July 23rd through the 27th with a new advanced 201 camp running July 30th through August 3rd. Each week is $195, and ages are 12 to 18. It's Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 12:30. More info on at kx935.com. Okay, this is KX93.5. You're listening to The Importance of Being Show. Today we're going to be talking about the moon, the sky, the stars, and all things in between. Anyway, we'll be back in just a moment. I'm going to play a couple songs. And then happy Father's Day to the dads out there. Okay, here we go. This is KX93.5.
I was a kid, you were my dad. I didn't always understand. I wanted freedom, you got mad. You were concerned, I got upset. I didn't recognize you yet. And did you cry? I know I did. When I lied to you, I didn't want to hurt you. I just never knew I did. You never told me that you loved me. I know you didn't know how. I guess that shows we're much the same, 'cause I love you too, and until now I've never said those words out loud. I hope you're proud to be my dad. Secrets, do you pray? Is there a God that shows your way? I wish I knew. Do you have crazy fantasies? What happens in your dreams? I wanna guess you'll always be a mystery to me, but you taught me how to value life, and what else do I need? I have a dad who watches over.
Sam with juvenile delinquent wrecks. Oh man, I need
what a drag. Too many snacks. Nah, I drunk a lot of wine and I'm feeling fine. Gotta raise some cap to bed. Oh, is there concrete all around? Or is it in my head? Yeah, I'm a goon now.
Oh, the young dudes.
Hey, goons.
Carry the news.
Where are you?
Boogaloo dudes.
Stand up.
Carry the news. Oh, the young dudes.
I want to hear you.
Carry the news.
I want to see.
All right, this is KX93.5. You're listening to The Importance of Being Show. Apparently, I said it wrong earlier. It's every Sunday morning from 9 to 10. And a happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. Today, I am happy to have as my guest Eric Morago of Moontide Press. And that is a publishing house that is devoted to poetry, correct?
It is correct, yes.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about Moontide and what your focus is.
Well, Moontide Press started in 2006. I was not the publisher or editor-in-chief then. I was barely even getting into poetry myself around 2006. Probably around the time when I first started seeing myself as a poet.
So you were a poet and didn't know it? Ba-dum-bum.
Yeah. I know this is radio, so people couldn't see me stare blankly back at you.
But yeah, that was quite the blank stare, like, really?
Yeah. You should have been able to feel it over the airwaves. So Moontide Press had been around from 2006. Like I said, I was barely just getting involved in the poetry scene, I guess you can call it. Definitely in the Southern California poetry scene. And the press was started originally focusing on Orange County poets.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and started in 2006 by Michael Miller, and he kept the press going for about 10 years before his life started changing. He moved with his wife out towards like Chatsworth area. They had a kid, and the press was kind of in limbo.
Right.
And I believe it was right around December of 2016, him and I had a conversation, and I offered to take it over and kind of made the announcement officially that I'd be taking over the press in January of 2017, and I've been doing it since.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so what made you gravitate to it? Why did you want to preserve it?
Well, I always really appreciated the press and the poets it published. I like independent presses. I like how they will give voice to, or basically opportunities to poets to publish work that might be overlooked by larger presses.
Okay.
They published my first collection of poems actually in 2010. And so, you know, they gave me an opportunity. They gave me a shot when my work might be overlooked by other presses just because I don't have name recognition. I don't have tons of publications in journals all over the country.
Right. Haven't established yourself in the major poetry scene.
Right. Not saying that it published we're not a vanity press. We're not publishing people just to make money off of them. And that's surely not what Michael Miller was doing prior to the press, too. It's we recognize talent when we see it, and we give you a shot. And we believe in you, and we'll help you, you know, get your work out there to people. And I always really liked that. So to see that disappear and go away was unfortunate. I'm a fan of some of the authors that the press had published in the 10 years before it folding and or being in limbo. Right. And I didn't want to see their work kind of just fade off into the ether of out-of-print books. And I wanted to continue that the philosophy of the press, mix it with my own philosophy and my own aesthetic, and kind of keep that journey going for the press.
So now, how did you you said you were only recently a poet at the time when you had that conversation?
Well, I had the conversation a decade later.
Oh, okay.
So 2006 was when the press started, which was around the time I was barely just becoming a poet.
Okay, so you knew you wanted to be a poet. You just had were just getting started at that point.
In 2006, yes.
Okay. And so
10 years later, that's when the press was going in limbo and I decided to take it over.
Right. And so what made you as a fairly new poet think that you were ready to sit in that chair?
Decade? I consider myself a new poet a decade later? I would imagine I'm pretty into the game a decade
you
later.
You think so?
Yeah.
I would think that most people who want to be poet. Okay, so let's go in a different direction.
Okay. A decade's a pretty long journey from just starting out in 2006 to deciding you want to take over a publishing company. Tomato, tomato.
Yeah.
there's that blank stare again, ladies and gentlemen.
Right. He's killing me here.
go ahead. What's your question?
So what made you gravitate to poetry as an art form yourself?
Okay, that's a funny question. I'm in the midst of teaching a workshop next week, and I'm looking for prompt poems. And one of the poems,
what kind of poems?
Prompt poems. They're like they kind of like get you going. They're like exercises. You know, write a poem like this.
Okay.
So, and I'm trying to find a perfect one for the first class. And I found this funny poem. And essentially the idea behind it is like, why poetry? So I never like to give writing exercises that I wouldn't myself write. So I've kind of been thinking of that in my mind. So it's funny that you asked that question itself.
Well, and the reason I ask it is most of the people that I've talked to who are poets have been writing poetry since they were a little kid or something. And they just kind of, I mean, those are the people I've met.
Well, sure. And
you obviously have more experience with them.
Right. No. And you know, I'll honestly tell people all the time. It's like, yeah, I wrote, you know, poems in high school and you know, whatnot and got up at open mics before. But I didn't really see myself actually being a poet.
Okay.
You know, a friend when I was in grad school, she once said, you know, when I first met you and you called yourself a poet, like it gave you a sense of authority. As opposed to saying, I write poetry, which I envisioned as you sitting in a darkened room by candlelight, writing verse, and then going to cry in the shower in the fetal position, listening to like Dashboard Confessional, like some emo music,
right.
And you wore all black. Not that there's anything wrong with that, people out there who do that. That's
You're
fine.
You're not judging them, okay.
No, I'm not. But she said there's a differentiation between you writing poetry and calling yourself a poet. So,
right.
I always wrote stuff, you know, had a journal and wrote, you know, rhymey, sing-songy, heartfelt, you know, boo-hoo poetry on the girls that I have crushes on, you know, like in high school and stuff. But then it just shifted, like, just kind of like the tumblers of that lock just like clicked in perfect succession. And, you know, around 2006, like it just made sense that this is kind of what I wanted to do. It was like a perfect perfect order of events got me to a place where it's like, hey, I'm good at this and I enjoy doing it. And why not?
Okay.
And that's kind of what started the whole poetry thing. And from there, it was just a journey of getting involved in the community, performing, writing, sending work to, you know, being accepted into journals and magazines, going to grad school, finishing grad school, hosting readings, teaching.
Okay.
It's a perfect storm of experience. And so the publishing thing came around, like I said, you know, just recently. And it's like, what else can I do for the community? Because I really do believe that being a poet isn't just about getting up on a microphone and, hey, look at me read.
Okay.
Or, you know, getting my book out there. I mean, and I think the responsibility of an artist, whether it be a poet, whether it be a painter, be what else can you give to your community, your fellow peers, besides just your work?
Okay, so it's contributing to the ecosystem and the health of that.
Exactly.
And building something.
And for me, publishing made the logical next step. But I'm not crazy enough to start something entirely on my own. So it was kind of nice to take something that already existed.
Yes.
And kind of just, yeah, it seemed a lot safer.
Okay.
People already knew who Moontide Press was.
Sure.
You know, when I say people, like probably like maybe 57 people.
Okay. Well, but well placed people.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like the world didn't know. It's not like I'm like Random House or Penguin or something. You know, so it was a lot. I felt like I had like a safety blanket rather than just like starting something.
Oh, yeah.
Completely myself.
Yeah, with zero.
Yeah.
Then like, okay. All right. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Importance of Being Show. I'm your host, Ernest Hackman. We do this show live every Sunday morning from 9 to 10. And today I have as my guest, Eric.
I could be the host too.
Stop looking at me like that. Eric Morago of Moontide Press. We'll be right back. This is KX93.5.
So hurt, why then don't you show it? You say you've lost your faith, but that's not where it's at. You have no faith to lose, and you know it. Behind my back, I used to be among the crowd you're in with. Do you take me for such a fool to think I'd make contact with one who tries to hide what it don't know to begin with? Surprised. You say, how are you? Good luck, but you don't mean it. When you know as well as me, you'd rather see me paralyzed. Why don't you just come out? Could stand.
Sunset is an angel weeping, holding out bloody sword. No matter how I squint, I cannot make out what it's pointing towards. Sometimes you feel like you live too long, and days drip slowly on the page. You catch yourself pacing the cage. I've proven who I am so many times. The magnetic strip's worn thin, and each time I was someone else, well, everyone was taken in. Power is shattering high places, Sarah Betty's in the dust of rain. Catch yourself facing the cage. I never knew what you all wanted, and so I gave you everything. All that I could pillage, all the spells that I could sing. To steal the thing were written in the constitution of the age. Well, sooner or later, wind up pacing the cage. Time's the best map, cannot guide you. You can't see what's round the bend. Sometimes the road leads through dark places. Sometimes the darkness is your friend. Today these eyes can these outlands or the coming of the outbound stage? Oh no, no, you catch yourself facing the cage. Yeah, 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 you catch yourself facing the cage. Catch yourself, oh, pacing the cage, yeah, 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 yeah. You catch yourself, oh, pacing the cage, yeah, yeah. You catch yourself, oh, pacing the cage.
All right, this is KX 93.5. You are listening to the Importance of Being show. I'm your host, Ernest Hackman. We do this show live every Sunday morning from 9 to 10. And my guest this morning, oh, I got the thumbs up. I feel better about myself. Two thumbs up. Okay, Eric Morago, a publisher of Moontide Press, a press devoted to poetry. Eric, when we left off, you told me that you took over the press from someone who had already established it. And now that you also said that you are now a poet, or you talk about yourself as a poet, introduce yourself as a poet, if you will. What's the difference between, say, being the publisher, and being the poet? How does that feel?
It's good. It's always nice to kind of wear different hats, and it allows me to take a break sometimes, focusing on my own writing and focusing more on other people's writing, which is nice because sometimes you get stuck whenever you're doing something. So it's nice to kind of go back and forth between different elements of the same craft.
Okay.
As publisher, I'm really focused on, I'm still focused on audience. As a writer, I'm always focused on my audience.
Oh.
Because when I'm writing, you write for yourself, but, you know, you should also be thinking about who am I writing for besides just myself.
Right.
You know, who is my target audience?
So who are you targeting?
I generally, as a poet, I like to target really the everyman or woman. People that don't generally think of poetry, they have an idea of what poetry is supposed to be.
Right.
But when I write, I want them to think about it differently. Like, oh, I didn't know that could be poetry.
Okay. So you're not writing for academia?
Not per se.
Okay.
You know, I like to use humor. I like to be conversational at times. However, I am very interested in the elements of craft, the music of language, and searching for, you know, those surprising metaphors and similes that kind of push the reader, even if they don't know that they're being pushed, to kind of enter the world of the poem and kind of think about its meaning a little bit, even if they're doing it subconsciously, like
okay.
to infer their own understanding of the piece. And that's something that's I'm very interested in. So, you know, I want it to be appreciated by, say, academia, but I want it to be digested by the general public and enjoyed by the general
public. Okay, so you want something that holds together under scrutiny.
Right.
But also is accessible to everyday people.
Exactly. And, you know, has a little bit of fun mixed in there.
Okay.
Because if you're not having fun at what you do, why do it? But now there's a difference, though. Now, taking on as a publisher, I have to think a little differently about my audience, per se, you know, because my audience might not necessarily be my author's audience.
Okay.
My author may have a slightly different audience.
Okay.
So when I'm acting as publisher, I am thinking kind of like in a more diverse or larger audience scope. Like I don't want to just publish, I was talking about this the other day, I don't want to just publish poets like myself.
Oh,
because yes. I don't want the press to be, you know, a bunch of cloned Eric Moragos running
the
around.
The bro club?
Yeah. Or like Eric in a wig. So that's really important to me. So I might be publishing authors' work whose style might not necessarily be something I gravitate towards.
Okay,
but I can appreciate and understand the quality and the care that they're taking in their work, and it has that quote unquote something that just hits me as a reader. So when I get a manuscript sent to me, which I get a lot. You know, there's got to be that tug, that pull, that something about it. Even if it's a style of writing that I might not necessarily write myself, it's got to have that something that intrigues me.
And so how do you kind of differentiate from, say, the raw, something that's raw from somebody who's talented and something that's very well produced but doesn't have a lot of talent?
Have that edge. Well,
or edge, yeah.
Yeah, I would say edge. I would... I think that's a careful misunderstanding in the sense that, like, I think it's,
well, I kind of feel like I have to be careful because you've given me the stare.
No, it's difficult. Like, I think, yeah, people can be very good writers and have very good understanding of music and meter. But I sometimes I feel like that writing runs the risk of not having enough heart in it. It's got too much head.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's too cerebral.
Right.
Where I kind of want.
And they know all the techniques, the construction and all, but
exactly.
You know, it's like architecture, right? You
got to feel. You got to have that feeling too. I mean, I enjoy reading work and writing work that has that kind of great balance between head and heart.
Okay.
So it's true. And then I'll get some really raw stuff sometimes sent to me that has all that feel, but not enough. We'll just say experience.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah. And structure
to craft,
and the things that
to hone it well. So. I guess I'm just always looking for, and moving forward with the press, I always want to publish that stuff aesthetically that I like. Like I said, it has that right balance between head and heart.
Okay.
You know, and it doesn't have to be the exact balance that I would write, but it still has to have that balance to me.
Okay. So now I would imagine as a poet, there are many dark moments or lonely moments or sometimes working in the negative space.
Sure.
As a publisher, do you leap out of bed with a song in your heart?
No. Oh. No. I mean,
it is the life of your dreams, though, right?
Well, I mean, sure.
It's all parts.
Because I am just raking in the dough being a poetry publisher. I take money baths regularly, like Scrooge McDuck. In DuckTales, I've got my giant chamber of
right.
gold doubloons that I dive in every morning. Yeah. No, I enjoy what I do very much. It is great to, you know, I'll be working on a book of a poet, and I just get excited by just knowing that this work is going to get out there in people's hands.
Okay.
You know, like right now we're working on, for the fall, I'm doing an open submissions currently for an anthology of poetry inspired by the horror genre.
Oh.
So horror films, literature, mythology, folklore, general horror tropes. So I'm not looking for spooky poems per se, but I'm looking for poems that are kind of a response to or inspired by, mm-hmm. you know,
got that thread woven into them.
Yeah, I'm thinking about writing a new poem right now dealing with mother issues between Jason Voorhees and his mother, you know, and trying to explore that relationship. Okay. I don't know if that's going to see, but things like that in that vein. So I've been getting a lot of submissions, and there's been some poems that I'm just like, wow, that is such a cool unique take, so interesting, and I get jazzed and excited by that stuff. So yeah, I do wake up some mornings and, you know, click in my inbox and see, you know, I always get excited when I see a new submission and it's like, okay, what's this gonna be, you know, because it's like opening up a gift at Christmas and like, you know, oh, look at these ugly socks that my grandmother gave me, or great, more underwear, or
right,
you know, it's that, like, you know, giant toy that you never thought, you know, your parents could afford, and somehow they did.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So it's just that, like, that unknown feeling. So it's really, really, really cool. You know, sometimes, yeah, I get a lot of underwear, but every once in a while I get that, 1984 Nintendo Entertainment System.
But you retain that childlike joy of Christmas.
Now, beyond that though, wow, they're like taking on like the publishing side of things, like struggling with
like bills and stuff.
Yeah, the bills are one thing. I've been very, very blessed to have a lot of generous financial help from certain individuals that help us stay in the, I guess it would be in the black.
Okay.
Or what's the black? What's the color between black and red? Would that be kind of like gray?
Yeah.
And that's the goal of the press. I just don't want to lose.
You just want to stay out of the parentheses.
Money.
Yeah. You don't want to be in the middle of those.
I really don't want to lose money on the press. Put too much of my own money in and not see that kind of balance back out. That's ultimately the goal. And that's fine because it's really just a labor of love. But dealing with like the printing companies and the hassle back and forth with that. It's a lot of things. And, you know, every author is different. So every author comes with, their own set of expectations. And okay. Some authors are really easy to work with. Others can be a bit more challenging. Ultimately, I want the authors to be happy. And sometimes it's a little bit of a struggle.
Do you ever feel intimidated by your author like I sometimes feel with my guests?
Are you referencing anything in particular, Ernest? I've yet to...
There's not very many guests pick out my mistakes for me or...
That's the teacher in me, Ernest. That's the poetry teacher in me.
And they usually go along with my jokes because they're like, oh, he's wonderful.
You are wonderful. That was a good joke. That was funny.
Ba-dum-bum.
I've yet to be intimidated by any of my authors. Sorry. But I have been very blessed to have certain people submit to my anthologies and stuff. So the first project I took on as the publisher was doing an anthology of poetry, which is basically a collection of multiple people's work.
Okay.
And I had people who submitted and I accepted for that I look very much up to in terms of, you know, the poetry community. They're very, very established authors, known in very large circles, lots of awards and accolades,
mm-hmm.
and they submitted to me, and uh-huh. I was like, I can't believe you gave me these poems. I'm like, I'm so excited.
Like, yes.
Yes. So that, I mean, I wasn't intimidated, but I was incredibly enraptured by their support.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break. This is KX93.5. You're listening to The Importance of Being Show. And today my guest is Eric Morago of Moontide Press, devoted to poetry.
Around the corner to the coast in my shiny brand new ride. Dreams of California, my baby by my side. Gleaming chrome paint so fine, Caddy 66. Flaming fenders, leather seats, it seemed the perfect fit. But beware of a love that looks too good. Before you give your heart, a shiny brand new ride. Cracks showing through the paint, some flaws you just can't hide. Tears fall away and vaporize. Assault, it's getting in my eyes. Your disguise is feeding on my soul. Before you give your heart away, take a look. Dreams I'll die at dusk. Your chrome don't shine, your leather creaks. Your baby turns to rust. Your baby turns to rust. Your baby turns to rust. Your baby turns to dust. I am the queen of the road, running hard and fast. This rust is messing with my body work.
makes us blessed and makes for stormy weather. A friend in need, a friend indeed. My Japanese is better, and when she's pressed, she will undress, and then she's boxing clever. A friend in need, a friend indeed. A friend who bleeds is better. My friend confessed she passed the test, and we will never sever. Days dawning, skins crawling. Days dawning, skins crawling. Days dawning, skins crawling. A friend in need, a friend indeed. A friend who'll tease is better. Our thoughts compressed, which makes us blessed and makes for stormy weather. A friend in need, a friend indeed. A friend who bleeds is better. My friend confessed she passed the test, and we will never sever.
Alrighty, this is KX93.5. You're listening to The Importance of Being Show. I'm your host, Ernest Hackman. We do this show live every Sunday morning from 9 to 10. Today, I am happy to have as my guest, say that in all honesty, Eric Morago of Moontide Press, and that is a press devoted to poetry. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
So I guess I should, I'm actually kind of remiss, we probably should have talked about this earlier, that I met you through the poetry showcase that was put on by Kate Buckley, Laguna's first poet laureate.
That is true. That's where we met.
All right. So how did you get connected to Kate?
Actually, Kate, I met Kate when I first started out in the whole poetry thing. I think we met officially the summer of 2008. I was a fellowship in Idlewild. There was a writer's retreat.
Okay.
And Kate was there, and that's where we met. And right around that time, I think her first book with Moontide Press was actually published.
Oh.
Kate is actually a Moontide author that I inherited when I took over the press.
Oh, my gosh.
I inherited Kate.
All right. Say a couple nice things about Kate since we're on the air.
Oh, I mean, there's nothing but nice things to say about Kate. She's a great writer. She's got such a wonderful ear for language and the music of language. She did a great job, I felt, as Laguna's poet laureate. She brought a lot of great poetry events to your guys' community. Mm-hmm. I was lucky enough to be involved in two of them.
I think I was in both of them.
Yeah, and it was a great. Both were great events, and yeah, I couldn't say anything nicer about Kate. She's a wonderful person and an excellent poet.
Okay,
and a fantastic painter. The book that we published of hers, or Moontide published of hers, is a collection of poetry and some of her paintings too.
Oh, I didn't even know about the paintings.
Yeah.
So all right, revealed for the first time on my show. Mm-hmm. And also, I think one of those events was kind of devoted to recognizing John Gardner, who passed away recently, another poet from the Laguna Beach community part of the Laguna Beach community. And I think you said you knew him as well.
I did. I met John, again, early on when I was getting involved in the whole poetry shebang. So there's a venue in the city of Orange called Two Idiots Peddling Poetry. It's every Wednesday night.
Hmm.
At the Ugly Mug Cafe in downtown Orange. And that was one of the very first venues that I started going to regularly when I was trying to explore what this world of poetry really was. John, I had seen him read there. He was a name that got passed around a lot because of his connection to like the Southern California, the Orange County, like more of the Orange County poetry scene, and because of the work that he did with Shakespeare.
Yep.
The Shakespeare Company.
Yeah, the Shakespeare's Fool.
Right, yeah. And he's a really great man. Always a joy to listen to him read, and his voice is just incredible. He has just had one of the most amazing, just theatrical voices.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Okay, so let's go back a little bit.
Yes, let's go back.
Let's do the origin story.
The origin story. So what do you want to know?
Well, at what point did you decide?
I was birthed.
In the third grade. No, you know, clearly not very many parents go, you know, Eric, I think poetry is where you want to put your energy. You can make a good living. And
those money baths, baby.
Yeah. Gold doubloons. So it is a path not chosen by many.
Right.
What made you gravitate to it?
You know, it's really about I'm very focused on helping, and there is a aspect of healing that goes into, I believe, all good art.
Okay.
You know, there's a conversation with your community. There is a capability for growth and for learning. And that's always something that has kind of pushed me in all endeavors that I've pursued, is that conversation and that one-on-one interaction between myself and the other person.
Okay.
And I fell into poetry really because of, like I said earlier in the earlier segment, kind of was that perfect order of events that kind of just got me to where I needed to be at a certain point in my life.
Okay.
And really what it came down to was, you know, I was finishing up my undergrad after taking a little bit of time off, just kind of being very wayward, not knowing what I wanted to do.
Okay.
You know, and at that same exact time, too, I was in a relationship with a woman that I really thought I was going to end up with and marry.
I see where we've got a reservoir of creative material.
And that, unfortunately, did not pan out. So in that semester that I returned back to school, came to find out that she cheated on me. And was in a really
deep reservoir
and was at rock bottom. I was absolutely at rock bottom. It was like that, you know, the breakup had happened. You know, there was lots of rock bottom. We'll just say that. And one day I was taking this creative writing poetry class to kind of just finish up, you know, a class that I needed to get a piece of paper.
Yep.
I mean, I didn't really think anything of it. And in walks this poet by the name of Buddy Wakefield. And he's a world-renowned performance poet, slam poet. And his performance was just so so intoxicating. And what he had to say, like his words were just so, they were you know, they were like love knives. I say that because like, you know, they were like knives, but like when they stab you, it felt good. And it really just kind of like, I walked away from that experience being like, hey, I want to do that too. I want to give what he gave to me in that moment. I want to give that to other people.
Okay.
So that really was kind of like the catapult that just kind of got me going, you know? And from there, you know, I wrote, you know, my first real piece where I was thinking about the audience. And of course it was to myself, but I was also thinking about the person I was writing to hear the piece.
Okay. And so is that the kind of a big transition from being a hobbyist amateur poet?
Yeah. I think that would definitely be that moment, because I was thinking about the audience, like, and the like, I'm going to look you in the eye when I read this. I'm not just sitting, you know, dabbling at my computer, typing right. away, you know, trying to take on Bukowski, you know, drink and write, like, you know, because that sounds something like a 24-year-old white dude should do, you know. No, it then became more about, you know, about my audience, my reader, or the person that I'm going to perform this poem
for. So establishing that connection with the audience,
right,
in some meaningful way.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, we are out of time.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Eric,
it was a pleasure. Thank you.
Moontide Press.
Yeah. If people want to know more about Moontide Press, you can. We've got a website. We're legit. Moontidepress.com. If you are a poet and you're interested in submitting your work to Moontide Press, you can go to our website, find out more information there, or you can email me at any time at editor@moontidepress.com.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, thanks so much for being on the show. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks for having me.
All right. This is KX93.5. You've been listening to the Importance of Being show. Coming up next is Steve Reed and the Coast Highway Shuffle on KX93.5.
Tell the one above he's a criminal for taking and giving life like marble candy. Everything collapses around me, overwhelms and astounds me, a terrible truth. When you leave this life, the world will be a darker place for all who remain. When you leave this life, place for all who remain. And the light you gave the human race will go away. I see you every time that I close my eyes. I hum every lullaby that she used to sing. Never know the last time you see someone, so give them all love you love, 'cause they're disappointed.